Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. 185 years ago, on August 21st, the most violent slave rebellion in the history of the South unfolded over a 48-hour period in Southampton County in Virginia. Led by Nat Turner, the rebellion, which was also known as the Southampton Insurrection, left more than 65 whites dead. And in the aftermath, the state executed 56 people, and close to 200 African Americans were killed by white militias and mobs. Turner himself was captured 2 months later, and he was sentenced to death. His confession, which was given to his attorney, Thomas Riffin Gray, was later put into writing and published as the famous Confessions of Nat Turner, the leader of the late insurrection in Southampton, Virginia. In 1967, author William Styron drew both critical acclaim and outcry for his novel of the same name. There's a movie coming out this fall that's already drawn a lot of attention. It's a new interpretation of Nat Turner's history. It's Birth of a Nation.
Let the high praise of God be on the mouths of the saints and a two-edged sword in their hands to execute vengeance on the demonic nations and punishments on those peoples, to bind their kings with chains. Dishonor have all his saints. Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. Sing to him a new song.
Kenneth S. Greenberg is Distinguished Professor of History at Suffolk University in Boston. He's written extensively and co-produced a documentary about Nat Turner. And Greenberg has edited the forthcoming second edition of the original Confessions of Nat Turner, which he says is American history's only direct account from a slave rebel.
Everybody agrees, everyone who's a scholar who's been through the sources, that the voice in the Confessions of Nat Turner is largely the voice of Nat Turner, with some additions from Thomas R. Gray. That makes it an almost unique document because we have no direct voices from enslaved people who were rebels other than this document from Nat Turner.
And that's worth pointing out, that of any other slave insurrection aside from this famous one in 1831, and there were many, records of them and records of the people who mounted them simply didn't survive.
Correct. And actually, there are many documents related to the Nat Turner Rebellion, but almost always those are African-American voices get filtered through white voices. The Confessions is filtered, but having looked at it really carefully, lots of people agree now that it's largely the voice of Nat Turner.
Did he have an appreciation when he was giving these statements, these interviews to his white lawyer at the time, that this was the way to get his story out to the world because he knew it had to be through a white conduit?
He didn't have to speak to anybody. He was in his jail cell. He gave this confession after he was captured. He could have easily said, "I'm not talking." He chose to talk, and he chose to create a narrative which he wanted to get out there. So it's an extraordinary document as a result of that.
So what additional scholarship do we have now going into the release of the second edition of the Confessions of Nat Turner that we didn't have before, not only through the original book, but then also the famous Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by William Styron, which was written in the 60s?
I think scholarship and writing about Nat Turner goes through cycles. Depending upon the current state of race relations in American society, there's a renewed interest in Nat Turner when things get tense again, when it comes to consciousness again in a big way. And that's what happened in the case of the 60s and William Styron's novel. That led to a clash between Styron's vision and many black writers and white writers who said that this was essentially a racist vision. But in terms of scholarship from historians, there's always been just the factual information, which, believe it or not, is hard to recover from 1831.
So the actual facts of the insurrection, how the conspiracy was mounted, how it was executed, et cetera.
Those kinds of facts, but even facts more basic than that, you know, many people who have looked at this said, well, if you read any history book and you pick up and you try to find out a figure like how many rebels were there, how many white people were killed, there's figures, they're within a range, but those figures are never nailed down. And the later scholarship actually does that.
There are also cases in the aftermath of this rebellion, which again was all the way back in 1831, of basically panic riots among white people, as I understand it, is way into the Deep South, even though this brief insurrection took place in Virginia. White people panicking that a slave revolt was widespread and there were reprisals hundreds of miles away.
Yes, it led to panic. The governor of Virginia thought that white northern abolitionists had inspired this rebellion. preachers had come down and their words had reached enslaved people. There were, in North Carolina, people who were actually arrested and tried for being part of the insurrection. None of that is clear whether anybody actually was part of the larger insurrection, but there was definitely a white panic. And then on the immediate scene, you know, the brutality of the killing, it is bloody, extremely bloody, and the whites, as they come across the farms which have been attacked, are absolutely furious. And there is a furious killing of African Americans as the rebellion is ended as well.
Has it ever been clear what the precise motivations of Nat Turner's compatriots were? Did they have the sense that this rebellion could spread and could actually be successful? Or was it more desperation that their situation was so dire that even a bloody end at the hands of militias or whatever authorities would descend on them was preferable to what they were experiencing?
We have no absolute clarity on this. But if you consider first Nat Turner as the one who really gave impetus to the rebellion, he clearly had in mind that they were going to move rapidly, move from farm to farm, kill everybody on every farm, creating a sense of panic and terror in the white community. And as they moved along, they would gather black recruits. And the swiftness by which they moved is extraordinary. And in fact, that is what happened in the initial moments of the rebellion. But then, you know, the ability of Virginia society to mobilize troops is extraordinary. Within a day, the white community had mobilized 3,000 armed people from militias and soldiers and so forth, descending on the community.
Well, Kenneth S. Greenberg, you've spent thousands of hours poring through the historical record of the Southampton Rebellion, the Nat Turner Rebellion. What are you still dying to know? And this might be an unfair question because the historical record is what it is. And I wonder if you had the magic ability to get one set of facts into your head, what would it be?
Well, actually, you know, I would turn it to a different problem as my central problem because I study 1831 and I know Nat Turner from the original sources that we have, which are very, very difficult to read. What happens is periodically, as happened with the Styron controversy, and it looks like it's happening again with the Nate Parker film as well, is that there's a kind of a turmoil which focuses not on Nat Turner really, but on the people who are writing about Nat Turner. And my great fear is that may happen again, and that would be a sad state of affairs. Nat Turner is a great American figure. He's someone we should admire because he fought for freedom. He gave up his life for liberty. So I'd like to see that recognized. And like any hero, he has flaws, but nonetheless unrecognized. And this is true for enslaved people who rebelled in general. You can go search the country for the monuments to those people. You can go to Virginia where the rebellion happened and go to the town where it happened, and you will find no monument to Nat Turner. You will find a Confederate monument to the Confederate dead. That's a sad state of affairs.
Kenneth S. Greenberg is Distinguished Professor of History at Suffolk University in Boston, Massachusetts. He's also editor of the forthcoming second edition of The Confessions of Nat Turner. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.